Welcome back to another episode of the Plants and Policies podcast, everyone. My name is Ina Tonchescu.
And I am Maddie Youngman.
Today, we are going to be talking about some of the disproportionate effects that climate change has on women in light of International Women's Day on March 8th, which is tomorrow. I'll start off by saying that we often look at social justice in issues in their own silos, but our world is much more interconnected. Our every decision as individuals and nations can have a ripple effect worldwide, especially our consumption habits from food to what we wear, etc. Today, I want to focus on how women are affected worldwide and right here in Canada by climate change. By the way, folks, Maddie is a graduate student in women's and gender studies, and I felt that Maddie would bring some amazing input to this topic. Maddie, I'm sure that there are studies you'd like to highlight for us, so let's just get into them.
Yeah, well, there are endless studies observing how women and other marginalized groups and identities are impacted. And even though today we are going to talk about how women are impacted by climate change, I would just like to note that all marginalized groups are impacted in similar and then also in different ways to what we will be discussing. So just to keep that in mind, and the sort of just starting off here, like we normally would do every time on the podcast, getting into the facts right now. So the effects of human-caused climate crisis consist of massive heat waves. The list is going to be long, and droughts, floods, more frequent and intense storms, hurricanes and tornadoes, ocean warming and rising sea levels, wildfires, which I know very well here in Alberta, soil degradation, impacting food production, deforestation, biodiversity loss, mass extinctions, and delayed and atypical weather patterns such as snow and precipitation. These destructive events have been and will continue to disproportionately impact those in the global poor, and especially the women and girls within these regions where climate disasters occur more often and with less governmental support and aid. So what does that look like? I'm going to start by pulling from the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, so UNFCCC for short, and their article, The Intersection of Gender and Climate, Five Facts About Gender Equality and Climate Change by Gabriela Carbozac. So in this, Carbozac claims that girls and women do not experience climate change in the same ways that boys and men do. And the reason is that historical and structural gender inequalities also affect how and what to what extent girls and women can lead, make decisions, take action, and advance solutions to combat climate change. They say straight up, the facts are that environmentalism has always been a woman's issue.
Maddie, can you break down some specific examples of how women are affected?
Absolutely. So the first of which is that women have a difficult time even leaving the areas that are prone to climate change impacts and natural disasters. And this is from the UNFCCC, which continues to write that research from the World Bank's 2021 Groundswell report found that climate change could force up to 216 million people to move within their countries by 2050. And this does not even include people who have to migrate to a different country because of climate-related risks. They continue to say that migration decision-making in the face of climate risks is informed by gender roles and responsibilities. Women often face increased barriers to leaving disaster-prone areas because of their caregiving obligation, lack of financial assets, and limited rights to property and land. When they do manage to leave, girls and women face higher risks of unemployment, child marriage, human trafficking, and gender-based violence. So women are also excluded from the decision-making spaces and climate change negotiations on top of the difficulty in leaving the spaces that were sort of created by decisions that were not made by them and decisions made for them by most likely men. So they say that despite the unequivocal value of women's participation in climate movements and their history as environmental defenders, the facts are that men still fail 67% of climate-related decision-making roles, and women's representation in national and global climate negotiation bodies remain below 30%, which is way too low if you think about how many women there are and how many men there are as percentages in our sort of society.
Maddie, we've come so far in terms of women's rights, but I feel we've still have so much to go. This doesn't sound like we're in the 21st century. Human trafficking, child marriage, and violence against women, and the fact that they're stuck waiting for the man of the house to make the decision to save them from impending extreme weather events, et cetera. I don't know where to start.
Yeah, I know. And the thing is, sadly, it doesn't end there. So let's talk about health for a little bit, as we do at CRFP. So from the UNFCCC again, they say that women face disproportionately high health risks from the effects of climate change, quoting that climate change threatens reproductive and maternal health, increasing in temperature, rainfall, and humidity increases create favorable conditions for vector-borne diseases such as malaria, dengue fever, and the Zika virus, which these all can cause miscarriages, premature birth, and anemia among pregnant women and pregnant people. And in February 2022, they cite the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, which says that girls and women are also at higher risk for food insecurity than boys and men and are likely to die, more likely to die in extreme weather events and are more likely to experience mental health impacts caused by climate change. And that's where the quote ends. So, and we've talked about how the impacts of food insecurity and that sort of area a few weeks ago, but not as much as we could have talked about the gendered effects. So this is sort of hinting at some of the gendered effects of food insecurity and how climate change also plays a role in that.
The food insecurity problem is so much deeper as well. Women are still paid less than men, leading to affordability issues. And of course, this always ties in as everything is interconnected to the food choices people make. Can they afford to eat healthier when they're just trying to survive? Now, we know that women are often more likely to be the change makers, the ones leading the charge in social justice and other issues. Can we, so to speak, rise up as a group and demand and lead the change that we want? Can we make a difference as women?
Oh, we certainly can make a difference. There are some challenges involving how we can do that, but you know, the gender-specific threats that are used to silence female environmental leaders are one of the biggest ones. So Patricia E. Perkins, in the article Climate Justice, Gender, and Intersectionality, explains that women's leadership has positively impacted community resilience during natural disasters, and that highlighting the transformative potential of women's leadership in addressing the climate crisis through having their voices heard as just one means. There are many others that you can also sort of involve in that process. We can then start to build more resilient communities and more effective mitigation policies. This is because, quote, women's lived experiences, responsibilities, and skills often make them experts in the best ways to use the very limited resources that they have to address climate-related challenges.
It's clear that women are terribly disadvantaged, even when they're proactive about climate change and, of course, in the reactions from climate change effects.
Yeah, and speaking about being proactive, the UNFCCC reported that female-led groups do not receive sufficient climate funding. Mm-hmm. So quoting from there, they cite the Generation Equality Action Coalition on Feminist Action for Climate Justice, kind of a mouthful, but I'm glad they're doing the work that they're doing. You know, CRFP, Canadians for Responsible Food Policy, is a long title, but when you look at this, when you look at this one, you're like, wow, could be longer. So we should be grateful that it is shorter. Anyway, so they found that just 3% of philanthropic environmental funding supports girls and women's environmental activism. Additionally, female-led organizations, which are often small, have difficulty accessing funding in general. They continue to say that because of the societally imposed caregiving roles that they have, girls and women have a deep understanding and extensive knowledge of their natural environment and resources. Financing their vision and backing their ideas for sustainability is going to be key for successful climate change adaptation and mitigation strategies.
I imagine the many women who are stuck affected by climate change in so many ways. It's important to stay motivated throughout this. There are so many of us driving change already, finding creative ways to influence food policies and people, and that's people like myself or Maddie. So if you're listening today, please don't feel discouraged. In fact, I hope this lights a fire within you of why we need to address the current food system as it is and adapt better systems, not just for the planet and for the animals, but our fellow human beings too. The following are five reasons why climate action needs women from the UN 2023. One, climate action requires 100% of the population. Two, empowering women means better climate solutions. Three, women are key to building climate resilience in communities. Four, climate change affects us all, but not equally. And five, countries recognize the importance of gender in climate planning.
And they're all great reasons, and some of which we've sort of already touched on in our discussion. So we cannot really expect to drive change with just 50% or less of the population. And so we absolutely need all hands on board, and women and gender diverse people are included in that.
Mm-hmm. And women are also known to build more resilient communities. They're likely to be the first responders in devastating events caused by extreme weather and are often involved with post-extreme weather destruction, cleanup, and recovery.
Mm-hmm. And on top of that, Black and Indigenous women's perspectives and efforts in particular have thus far been almost entirely excluded from climate policy decision-making, despite their consistent and powerful efforts. Appeals to cultural expertise and knowledge of sustainability practices and ability for transformative leadership. Without the support and power of these activists and these women, our efforts towards mitigating the climate crisis will not be successful, and we need to sort of uplift these voices and prioritize their needs and voices in the in the decision-making process. And without that call, I don't see us progressing in the way that we really need to. And so the UN in that report states that investing in women and girls has a far-reaching benefit for communities and countries. And in fact, they cite research that shows that countries with high representation of women in parliament are more likely to push for international environmental treaties.
These are some really great points, Maddie. I actually was thinking about how when I mentioned interconnectedness, I keep saying interconnectedness, and it's like even deeper than what we've been saying so far. It's interconnectedness of gender and also the identities of people and nationalities of folks, and trying to bring all of that together. The more connected we are and the more people we bring to the table to have these conversations from diverse backgrounds, the more likely we are to be able to have a wholesome, holistic, change-driven agenda.
And one that will actually work. Like one that we can actually implement, because if everyone's not on board, then we can't effectively mitigate or even adapt to climate change.
Yep, absolutely right. I'll tell you a small little tangent that I think is very relevant to this. I recently was part of a project management workshop that I was running with a fellow colleague, and we were actually hosting people from all over the world, Pakistan, Bangladesh, there was Netherlands and Norway, and there were people from the US as well, and literally all over the world. And I started thinking about how the conversations that we were having, there was sort of like an assumption of knowledge or assumption of information that I was delivering that I very quickly realized that is not going to be the same, the same way, the same system, the same culture behind all of these folks. They come from so many different backgrounds. So I actually had to ask them questions in order for me to sort of change the way I was delivering the information that could better suit what they're going to be facing in their countries and in their cultures. And so I think it's very important to have as many people and as many perspectives at the table. And I think women's perspectives have oftentimes been overlooked. As someone who works in as a small business consultant, women's perspectives are often overlooked. And the more we bring them to the table, the more change you see. Now, these references that you have given us, Maddie, are some amazing resources for those interested in learning more on how women are directly impacted by climate change, extreme weather events, and of course, how the food system ties into all of that.
Yeah. And just to sort of bounce off of what you're saying before, you know, like the diversity of experiences and, you know, listening to, I guess, alternative modes of like being strategic about how to mitigate climate change, like that is just so, so important and often overlooked, as you say.
Yeah.
And I was going to say something else, but I have now forgotten it. I just would like to give a shout out to the organization Canadians for Responsible Food Policy, CRFP, that is comprised of mainly women and gender diverse folks. I'm consistently motivated to be a part of this group, and I am so thankful to be a part of a group that honors the contributions that we make, and so lucky to sort of be in the space where we acknowledge how important bringing diversity to the table is.
Yeah, we're so lucky to be volunteering at CRFP and have such amazing diverse folks leading the change. And we also have a pretty strong equity, diversity, inclusivity, and decolonization draft that a statement that Maddie had actually helped us put together as well. And I think it's so important to have our organizations be the leaders in addressing EDID if we're ever actually going to make this change. And CRFP, I see CRFP as being a leader in this change. So folks, I don't think this is going to be the only episode on this subject, because this just scratches the surface of what our decisions do to others around the world. We're planning on diving deeper into this subject at a later date for a special episode, maybe, so stay tuned. For this International Women's Day, I challenge everyone to share a small bit of how women are affected by the impact of climate change. It's very easy to find this information online. Thank you for tuning into this episode of the Plants and Policies podcast. Please consider donating at responsiblefoodpolicy.ca to help us continue to bring more research findings and news to you. And of course, as always, you can catch us on Spotify, YouTube, Podbean, Samsung, Podchaser, and so many more channels. And don't forget to subscribe and follow. And we'll see you next week. Bye, everyone.